through the Alaska Airlines studios.
This is Jake and Stacy on 710 ESPN Seattle. Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Ross.
Welcome into Jake and Stacy. Jake Heaps, Stacy Ross here with you. This defensive turnaround, Jake, has been something else. It took me a while to buy into it. I'll admit, I'm the pessimist between the two of us, but I'm starting to buy in. In fact, I think I have bought in. Let me tell you why. When I look at just the numbers, which is something that I lean on, it just makes me feel a little more confident about it. They are seventh in sacks right now with 31. And consider that they had, Jake, nine sacks entering their bye week. It looked very much like those problems with the pass rush, specifically those problems with getting to the quarterback, disrupting him, getting those sacks, were just as bad, if not worse, than they were the year before. And it was, you know, adding insult to injury, the pass defense and the secondary had been abysmal when we thought it would be a strength of the team. So everything was looking pretty dire there. The only saving grace that we had was that this offense was stellar. Now, that hasn't turned around, but the defense has taken a huge step forward. Pete Carroll kept saying, hey, they're making a turn. We were doubting him because he's an optimistic guy. It's hard, you know, not to just be like, well, wait a minute, Pete. Hold your horses, slow down a bit. Let's see if they really have made a turn. But it's hard not to see the turn happen. From weeks 1 to 7, Jake, they averaged 1.5 sacks per game. That's 26th in the league. They have 22 in the last 5 weeks. They're now second in per game sack totals. I mean, when you isolate that to just 4 weeks, I think they're first. So they have done a complete turnaround.
They have. And Stacey, this isn't all against the bad news Bears, right?
Yeah.
Oh, Stacey, how could you say that? How could you say that this turn, they just played the Eagles. They're terrible. They're a terrible offense. Well, over the last 3 weeks, okay, they also total defense, Stacey. They're 12th in the NFL in total defense.
Insane.
Over the last 3 weeks. And two of those were against NFC West opponents that I think that people would take seriously, like the Rams and the Cardinals, and so you are starting to see a different defense. They're not turning themselves into a top 10 defense or anything of that nature yet, but they certainly are changing in terms of their production and the style in which they're playing.
Absolutely. And it's you're looking at the yards per game. That's changing too. They're still giving up the most per game, but don't forget, they were around 472 yards per game at their peak. That is a lot. That was on pace for the worst yards given up in NFL history. It would break the total set by the Saints in 2011 when they were giving up 440 yards per game. Well, guess what? The Seahawks have since kind of dodged that bullet. Now, it remains to be seen whether they can hang on to it, but they've brought that down to 418 yards per game. So still worst in the league, but you're inching a little closer to not being that. That's cutting off 54 yards per game. In fact, Jake, the turnaround has been so good that even Colin Cowherd is saying the Seahawks have solved their problem.
What?
By the way, in September, Seattle had 5 total sacks and allowed 500 yards a game in September. In October, they allowed 460 yards a game. In November, they have 22 sacks and are allowing 340 yards a game. Every month, they coach it up, they acquire, they get better, and you watch Seattle last night, and to me, they look like a Super Bowl team. Because they got the coach, the quarterback, the pass rush, and the playmakers. Not saying they're going to win the Super Bowl, but those are the four things you have to have. And one of them was missing in September and early October, and now they've solved it.
I mean, they've solved it. According to Colin Cowherd, they've solved it. So, obviously, look, take that with a grain of salt. We still got to see how these next couple games play out. But they have an advantage of playing three really struggling opponents coming up here in the next 3 weeks. Not only that, but assuming Carlos Dunlap is still healthy, Jake, it's hard not to point to him as the person who deserves maybe the most credit for their turnaround. I got to split it with Ken Norton Jr. too, because if we're going to blame him for the failures of the defense, here's Jake, if we are going to say that when they're the worst defense in the league, it's Ken Norton Jr.'s fault, when they get better, you can't just avoid giving him credit. I mean, he's still there. So I'll split it right now between those two. I know Jamal Adams plays a huge role. Accountability from veterans plays a huge role. There are myriad factors here. But if I have to pick, it's going Carlos Dunlap and it's going Ken Norton Jr. How about you?
Okay. And that's very fair. I totally agree with you on the Ken Norton Jr. part of it in terms of if you're going to place the blame, very much like a quarterback, if you're going to give him all the credit, then you have to give him the blame. And in reverse here with Ken Norton Jr., if you're going to give him all the blame and call for his job, then you also do have to give him credit when they are succeeding. And Carlos Dunlap, it's been so fascinating, Stacey, watching him and his effect coming from a broken program that is the Cincinnati Bengals and being a part of that organization, yet coming in here with an infusement of energy and leadership and a level of play that I was hoping that he would bring, right? You never know, right, how these things are going to turn out. Clearly, I've been wrong in the past, Ziggy Ansah. Yikes, I'm gonna regret that one forever.
I will never forget it.
But with Carlos Dunlap, able to redeem myself a little bit here because I stood up on the table and said, look, this guy is going to be an impactful player. I truly believe that he was going to be an impactful player. I didn't know how much, though. I didn't know it would be this big of a turnaround. And he is a big physical guy who still has plenty left in the tank, who is collapsing the pocket, who is, you could see his influence on everybody else across that defensive line. And it's been really fun to watch. And I'm really crossing my fingers that Carlos Dunlap is going to be able to be healthy and he's going to be able to continue to be a part of this lineup and be a part of this defensive turnaround, that they're all building confidence together. So I think those are two outstanding picks. For me, in terms of some of the credit that you have to give for the defense turning around, who deserves the most credit, I'm going to say health. Health, to me, is the biggest determining factor of this unit actually becoming what they are right now. I think Carlos Dunlap and his individual play, you could say a couple other guys, but I really think that health overall has been such a factor for this defense in terms of just never being on the same page. Their defensive back group has just been a mix and match part, parts all the way through the season. And it's been really difficult to get on the same page and develop any sort of continuity. And I think the player that has been affected the most by this is Jamal Adams, the guy that you gave up two first-round picks for. He missed four games, and he also has not been able to play and solidify his play along with everybody else and feel comfortable in his role, specifically in coverage, because he doesn't know how to play off everybody else. And they are getting more comfortable with each other because they're getting healthier and they're building confidence together. And I hope, Stacey, that remains true. So number one to me is health. And then the other thing that I think is really important that we have to point to is the culture, right? That thing that's not tangible. It's not stats. It's not something that you look at a stat sheet and go, yeah, that is part of their turnaround. But you have to give a lot of credit to Pete Carroll. And you mentioned, Stacey, earlier that Pete Carroll, every single week, it's like, hey, we're going to turn this thing around. Just hang in there with us. We're struggling right now. We're dealing with injuries. And at some point, I think you become frustrated with that conversation because everybody's deals with injuries. Everybody is going through the same thing this year in a very unique year. And you guys are struggling more than anybody else. Right, the San Francisco 49ers are still a top 10 defense.
I was going to say, you and I were pointing to San Francisco saying, look what Robert Saleh's been able to do with basically a Pro Bowl, All-Pro lineup on their injured reserve.
Correct, but it doesn't mean that it's not true. It doesn't mean for Pete Carroll and what he was saying that it wasn't true, that these injuries were a factor in the way that this defense was playing. And I have to give credit for him and his optimism to see the light at the end of the tunnel before anyone else could or was even willing to go down that road. Because certainly we all were not willing to go down that road. Pete, we don't want to hear it, right? We don't want to hear that talk. We want to talk about what's happening right now. And I think with his experience and his foresight to continue to have that optimism and never waver and never change his approach, to me, is one of the greatest attributes of Pete Carroll, not just for this defensive turnaround, but the reason why they've been so successful as an organization over his tenure here in Seattle. And I don't mean that from an X's and O standpoint. although that has remained relatively true to who he is. But I'm talking about the culture, the conversation, the way that he approaches every single day, every single team meeting, the messaging that is coming down from him remains the same. And that doesn't happen anywhere else in all of football, Stacey. Mm-hmm. Not the NFL, not college, not all of football. That is a unique trait to Pete Carroll that, to me, makes him genuinely one of the best coaches to ever coach this game, is because of that unique trait. I've been around so many coaches, Stacey, and I've heard so many other stories from guys that there are coaches who are great when you're winning. They're great when the conversation in town is not questioning whether you should be the coach or not. You're a great coach when, you know, all the play calls that you're dialing up are there for you. But when things turn and when fingers are starting to point at you, guys change. Coaches change. They start pointing fingers at other people. They start throwing other people under the bus.
Adam.
They start, you know, they Adam Gase. They start doing a lot of different things that lose the team's respect. And Pete Carroll has never, ever done that. He's always stayed true to who he is. And I think that that's another reason why they've been so successful in turning this thing around. And hopefully it continues.
Does that carry over to players? Like, because I remember
100%
thinking,
it does.
Well, because I remember thinking for this next stretch of games, the most important thing you can do is build confidence and build a kind of swagger back in your defense. You have it with guys themselves, right? Like KJ Wright, Bobby Wagner, Jamal Adams. These guys are confident. These guys are capable. These guys are superstars. But it felt like something was missing. So I thought, well, here's a good stretch of games to build that. Do you think that was ever gone from within those walls, though, at Seahawks headquarters?
You know, I do believe that at some point you start to look around, you start to question. I do think that there were guys that weren't buying in fully into the system, and there are, you know, reasons that you could point to as to why they were not being successful. But the messaging still never changed, and it was up to the players as well as the coaching staff to make sure that they eventually found it, that they eventually came together, Stacey, and they were able to do that. And I think that that's probably the biggest aspect of this defense turning it around. And so when you talk about it coming from your head coach and him still having confidence and him still instilling confidence in everybody else, from my personal experience, Stacey, I was a broken player mentally. Just honestly, I was.
When you
my
arrived in
career,
Seattle, you mean?
And when I arrived in Seattle, I was a broken player mentally. And I was regaining that because I had worked my tail off. I'd been in the best shape of my life. I overcome a lot of adversity. But I had been beaten up, chewed up, and spit out in terms of what happened to me in my college career. Mm-hmm. I came to Seattle, and my confidence shot right back up. Because the conversation just instilled confidence in me and my play and what I could do and who I could be, and I played the best ball that I had played in a long time when I was in Seattle. And so I know what that messaging can do for a player and how it can change your trajectory. And so I think that and especially in adverse times. So I think that you cannot overstate how special that is of a coach that Pete Carroll brings that to this organization.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heap, Stacey Ross here. We're talking about who gets the most credit for the defensive turnaround. I said it's Carlos Dunlap and Ken Norton Jr. Jake said you got to think about it in terms of a little more abstract. It's health, it's culture, that those things are hugely important, Jake, having been a part of that culture. When we're looking at it, the weird elephant in the room, at least with mine, Jake, is that Carlos Dunlap suffered some kind of foot sprain. Pete Carroll wasn't specific about it post-game, maybe didn't have a ton of information. Carlos Dunlap, as we understand it, had an MRI yesterday morning. We have not gotten an update, in part because the NFL has closed facilities, and so there wasn't a press conference yesterday when those results might have come in. So we'll have to wait, presumably, unless it leaks, until tomorrow. I'm worried, part of me, because I'm a worrywart, about what the defense will look like, if it'll regress at all if Carlos Dunlap is out. But, Jake, the fact that they were able to see what they could be with him in there, maybe gives me hope that it won't, right? Because part of it is just seeing it. Part of it is you have, you really do sometimes. You have to see it to believe it. You have to see what you're capable of. We know they're not going to be a top defense, but they saw that they were capable of so much more than they'd been doing through the first half of the season. And I wonder if that's something that makes it stick.
And that's a great point. Confidence is everything. It's someone like LJ Collier. I mean, LJ Collier has started to flash this season, and he has had his moments. I mean, it's not that he has been a consistent, dominant, you know, first-round pick, but he has turned into a legitimate NFL player, okay? And that might be, you know, a bummer to hear for some people. What are you talking about? An NFL player is a first-round pick. I get it, but he's still young in this league, and he's developing, and he's had some, you know, big moments in games, and you know, his confidence is growing. You know, you look at Jaron Reed and Puna Ford, their confidence is growing. So overall, as a unit, I do believe they have gotten better, but I don't. I think they're fortunate, Stacey, that they're going up and again. They're going up against an opponent in the New York Giants this week. That and Colt McCoy at the quarterback position that
great
isn't
going to
threaten them, isn't going to threaten them so much that you're worried that they have to have Carlos Dunlap in there to win.
All right, let's get to three questions.
It's time for three questions.
Can't wait for it.
Every day at 11:15, three burning questions for Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
That's the dumbest question you could ask. What?
Well, you guys were just talking the Giants there. So what's your concern level in facing a New York team that's won three in a row heading into Sunday?
My level of worry is not at all. I mean, when you look at the Giants, who they played, okay, what were their wins against? The Redskins, the Eagles, the Bengals. And they beat the Bengals 19-17 without Joe Burrow and with Brandon Allen being your starting quarterback. So I'm not really too concerned about the Seahawks' ability to get the job done. I do think that the Giants are a decent team defensively. They've got some nice weapons offensively, but overall, with Colt McCoy at this stage in his career at quarterback, I don't think they have a chance to beat the Seahawks if the Seahawks come out and play the way that they should.
Yeah, they had a good win against Philadelphia. They also allowed, though, 346 yards from that Philadelphia offense. Seahawks held them a lot closer to 250 and essentially, I'd say, like 9 points until the very end. I'm a little bit, not nervous, but aware that the Giants and Washington are the two better of these four opponents. Like, I'm aware of it. Washington might be the best of them, honestly, because they've got some offensive weapons that when they connect and have chemistry, are pretty efficient. And they also have the best defense of all of these teams, specifically their pass defense. So when we get to Washington, I might be saying, like, oh, I'm a little bit nervous. But here's the thing. It doesn't matter. You should beat the Giants. You are a better team. You're a better roster, quite honestly, on both sides of the ball. This is a game you should win. So whether or not I'm a little nervous given their numbers, you're a better team. It shouldn't matter.
Number two.
Last week, Pete Carroll said Rashad Penny could return to practice this week. We might hear a little bit more during Pete's presser later this afternoon. What will Seattle's running back rotation look like once Penny comes back?
Well, it makes you wonder who is going to be cut from the running back roster. Because you can't have five running backs on the roster, right? I mean, you're going to have Chris Carson, Carlos Hyde, Travis Homer, DJ
Homer
Dallas.
Pete Carroll's dream is to have the whole roster made out of running backs.
That's exactly right. It's to have your linebackers, maybe four on the field at once,
also
if you can get
backs.
That happen.
Once you get Miles Jack, bring him as a running back.
Exactly right.
True. You do have Nick Ballore, who is a linebacker, now turned into a fullback. He's part of
Pete's
your backfield.
Pete's dream position.
Oh, man, absolutely. That's a good point, Curtis. So maybe this is going to be a harder decision than I thought. I would assume that it's going to be Travis Homer or DJ Dallas. And Stacey, as you mentioned, Homer has been struggling with a hand injury of some sort. So he might be the most likely candidate that they actually move to the IR in the meantime to kind of figure out how things are going to go. So that's probably their immediate move that you could anticipate. But, yeah, they're going to have to make a move somewhere to make room for Rashad Penny. But I see him playing the role that DJ Dallas currently has as that third down back, change of pace back to go along with Carlos Hyde and Chris Carson. Rashad Penny isn't all of a sudden going to come in there and start really taking away carries from either one of those two guys.
No, I do wonder, though, if they're going to get him involved in the pass game. I mean, he was, you know, adept at that for a while before he got injured. It felt like he was almost like a hybrid between that bulldozing running back and then what they wanted mm-hmm. from CJ ProSize. He wasn't the kind of finesse running back that ProSize was more like, weirdly enough.
Right.
But I wonder if they're going to try to take advantage of his hands a little bit there in the pass game. And as far as the comment about Homer, I think that's the move they'll end up making, especially if his, because he's got a couple injuries. He's got like a wrist and is it a thumb or finger injury? And then he's also got some kind of other injury. So I think that'll be the move that they make. Keep in mind, though, they have a window of time to decide. So they don't have to activate Penny just because he returns to practice. They might wait a couple weeks. So you may not see them do anything quite yet, you guys.
Number three.
The Seahawks this year have been keeping Russell Wilson and Geno Smith apart as much as possible to keep at least one of them active at all times. So will NFL teams now be more vigilant about keeping their starting quarterbacks healthy and apart after the COVID outbreaks in Baltimore and Denver?
If you didn't learn from the Denver situation, then I don't know what to tell you. Protect your quarterbacks at all costs. And I'm just telling you right now, Russell Wilson is doing every single thing possible to make sure that he is going to be ready to go and healthy for every single game. He is almost going overboard with some of the stuff that he's doing,
like,
and
what?
Making sure that everybody around him is doing. I don't want to get into it, but it's funny sometimes. Like, it's what you got to do. Yeah, if you're taking this thing as seriously as possible, and you want to be there for your team, you know, just in the way that Pete Carroll's talking about it, always compete, do everything you can to avoid it the best you can. Sometimes it's inevitable. It's a virus. You can't run away from it completely. But I think it's something that, you know, every team should be doing everything they can to ensure their quarterbacks are not testing positive.
Yeah, I don't know if they're going to separate Geno and Russ. I mean, you got to have Geno there on game day, but it says Danny Etling still on their practice squad. I would anticipate now that Danny Etling does every quarterback meeting remotely, does not come into contact with any of the quarterbacks or with any of the team. It might be like
Josh
Fromm?
McCown.
Oh, I was going to say, I think with Fromm, they're doing that too, where he doesn't get to interact with the team at all. He's separate. I think that the practice squad quarterback, who right now is Danny Etling, You're done now. Everything you're doing is virtual. You're going to be the designated survivor that stays apart from everyone.
I believe Josh McCown is employed by a team, but is like staying at home. Like, yeah, he's not even going into the facility this year.
He's got the greatest gig this year I've ever heard of. It's unbelievable.
Backup quarterback. Like, already one of the best jobs in the NFL, because you get to be the hero if you throw like a single touchdown, but you also don't become the villain when you lose, because, you know, expectations aren't always on you. You're the backup for a reason. Now you get to work remotely from home and relax and chill.
He's with the Texans.
Man, what a gig. All right.
What a gig. I mean, is he the quarterback coach? Like, that's the only thing that I can think of. What value does it serve you to have Josh McCown on the roster right now, other than just to be a mentor to Deshaun Watson or any other quarterback? That's literally the only role that he's playing, and he's getting paid like $10,000 a week to do it. What a gig.
Did I see the Denver OC, am I thinking of this right, Curtis, added his son as the quarterback too, or they added his son?
Oh, I think so.
Okay.
Yeah.
I saw like it briefly on my timeline, and I just skimmed over it, but yeah, I mean, man, poor Denver. In trouble there. All right, Mike Salk, let's get back to this defense. Mike Salk was right along with us saying this defense was so awful and would potentially cost the Seahawks their chance at a Super Bowl. Let's find out if he changed his mind next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacy.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacy Rost.
Mike Salk joining us right now, brought to you by Jafco Plumbing and Sewer. Mike, I have a question for you, but before I ask, I saw you were watching, you and your daughter watching football together yesterday, and she was getting interest. Oh, I'd love that.
Over the weekend, yeah. So my older daughter, Avery's never really shown much of an interest in playing nor watching sports, which is fine.
Yeah.
And Cecily's a little bit more athletic, but whatever. And then all of a sudden, she just started taking an interest the last couple of weeks. It was 2 weeks ago. She kind of watched a little bit, had a few questions. Most of the questions are about the flags.
Fair.
And when you watch with a six-year-old who's constantly asking questions about flags, you realize just how often they throw flags in the NFL.
Yeah.
And she's like, what's this flag for? What did that person do? Why did they throw a flag here? Why did they throw a flag there? Why the flag? What does the flag look like? Why did they call it a flag?
You should get her a flag.
Well, I tried. Brock was going to try to get her one because he played a referee for a day, but he can't find his. So we'll see. I will look for one. Be a good Christmas present. It's been awesome. First time she's really shown an interest in learning about the game, and you realize how complicated it is to explain sports to somebody who doesn't understand it from Adam. Football is easier than baseball. When the kids ask you questions about baseball, you're just like, I don't know how to even describe it to you. It's just so vast. But with football, you know, the down and distance is such a crucial thing about the game that I think that's been helpful. But then you try to explain to somebody like, well, why are they, what does holding mean? Aren't they all holding each other?
Those are when you find the best questions, though, sometimes.
Right.
Because, like, the vast majority of my friends are not sports fans. And so sometimes they'll ask questions and I'll be like, oh, I don't know. And then I kind of pause and I'm like, oh, that's a really good question.
Right, you actually have to think about, like, well, I know it
that's
all looks
really
like
question,
holding,
though.
But only that really is holding.
Yeah.
And then I would say at least 50% of their questions are just about snacks. Is snacks playing?
Yeah.
Where is snacks? Is that snacks? Why does he wear 59? Do you like snacks? Yeah, they're all over that.
Do you like snacks?
And then the answer is obviously yes. Who doesn't love snacks?
Is he fun?
Yes.
So I do have a football-related question.
Okay.
It's not about flags. I regret that now. But Jake and I were talking about the Seahawks defense. We're both buying into it. They've clearly made a turn statistically. Are you buying it?
No, not yet.
Not yet?
I'm buying some of it. I am buying the improved pass rush.
Okay.
I'm buying that adding Carlos Dunlap, getting Jamal Adams back, Rasheem Green returning, all of those things together, along with I'm kind of buying the Puna Ford is playing better. Mm-hmm. And then putting those guys into the better role. We talked about this yesterday. Having Dunlap really take on a number one defensive end role allows everybody else to be a role player, which is really where they've all shined over the course of their career. I'm buying that the pass rush is better. What are they, seventh in the league or something like that in sacks? I mean, like, there's something legitimate there that you can't ignore. Am I buying that the whole defense is better? No, not yet. Because the last two times I saw them against capable offenses, they looked terrible. They got worked by the Bills. They got worked by the Rams.
What about Arizona?
I don't buy that. I don't buy that offense
yet.
Why not? When you talk to people in Phoenix.
You don't buy that offense?
Just talking to somebody in Phoenix, and he's like, well, we have the worst coach in the NFL. I mean, like, they can't stand things.
I'm sorry.
He compared their coach to Adam Gase.
Stop.
True
That's
story.
Not a fact. This person is being hyperbolic.
Probably, but still, you know, I'm not quite ready to say that. Just Arizona's so inconsistent. So, no, I'm not buying it yet, but I'm open to the idea that they have turned the corner.
Okay.
Have you seen The Undoing yet?
Yes!
All right, so The Undoing is great.
It's really
good.
Have you finished it?
No, I'm four episodes in. I got two to go.
Oh, it's so
but
good.
I love the idea. It's a very similar idea. She said, well, do you think he's guilty or innocent? Well, I think he's guilty, but I'm open to the idea that he may be innocent. I don't think they've made a turn, but I'm open to the idea that they have.
Will you tell me when you finish it?
Yes, I will.
So
it'll be in probably two nights.
Yeah, yes.
Tonight, tomorrow, and then I'll have it done.
So then the question I have for you based off of that is, what do you need to see from this defense against bad offenses over the next couple of weeks to make you feel like, yeah, you're open to it, but actually get you to start believing it more and more over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, probably two things. One, that killer instinct, right? You know, kind of looking suffocating instead of like they're just hanging on. And honestly, even against the Eagles, they never felt suffocating to me. They were open receivers. It just felt like Carson Wentz couldn't find them. And then when he did, couldn't accurately throw the ball to them. So I think they're going to have some of that suffocating feel. I don't know if they're going to do that. The reality of it, though, is, Jake, I don't think they can. I don't think they can prove it to me until they take on the Rams in the final week of the season. That's the test for this team. Like, I mean, shutting down Washington and New York and New York. I mean, those teams stink. They don't have real quarterbacks. They're not very good offenses. Their defenses are passable, but they don't have real offenses that are at, you know, the kind of caliber that the Seahawks are going to see once they get into the playoffs. And you're going to have to face New Orleans, when you're going to have to face Green Bay, when you got to face the Rams again. I mean, like, those are real serious and completely different levels of offense than what you're seeing out of the Jets, Giants, and Washington.
Right. It will be a true test, and I fully agree with you there. That's why Stacey and I, we've been hammering home the idea that there's got to be check marks. There's got to be things that you're looking for to see from this defense to feel like they're making that steady improvement,
like
so that they're ready.
Quizzes.
Yes.
Right, exactly. Like quizzes, and then you're going to have that cumulative test, and are you ready for the big final test that is going to be coming your way?
Yeah, I guess what I liked about the game, you know, to be more positive, what I liked about the game against the Eagles is that they didn't do it with fluke turnovers. They got one, which was great. I'm glad they got the turnover they got. But in the beginning of the year, it felt like they were hanging on by the skin of their teeth just because they would get some turnovers every game, right? You had some just weird bouncing balls and some bad throws. And it's like, well, they didn't play well, but at least they got that second turnover, right? What was the game where they came roaring back at the end thanks to a turnover? I forget which one that was now. God, they all kind of run together. One of the exciting wins early in, it might have been San Francisco who turned it over. You know, they got a bunch of these kind of like, wow, okay. Like they weren't good, but in three plays, they got two turnovers and a fourth down
Minnesota.
Stop, and they won. Yeah, it was Minnesota. And so I thought that the great thing about this past weekend was they didn't need that. Yeah, they got the pick in the end zone, but it was a fourth down play already. There was a decent chance they were already going to win that game no matter what happened on that play. They didn't win because of any flukes. They were the better team. Now, that's not hard to do when you're talking about an offense as inept as Philadelphia's, but they were better throughout 60 minutes, and I think seeing more outings like that will start to get us to, as you just said, Jake, pass some of those quizzes. But until you pass your final exam against the Rams at the end of the year, I don't know how much we can truly, truly believe.
We still got a minute left here, and I want to fit this in. I don't want to jump too far ahead too quickly because it's still fun to look back at that win over the Eagles, but is any part of you, even like a fraction of you, nervous about the Giants?
Only because every game I'm nervous about. I mean, it's the NFL. Like, I really believe in the any given Sunday thing. And if you don't show up and the ball bounces the wrong way, or you throw a bad pick, or you come out with the wrong game plan, or you sleepwalk through it and it's a trap game, you can always lose in the NFL. This is why Howdy got on me all those years ago for saying I was terrified of the Arizona Cardinals, not because I thought that they were a better team than the Seahawks that year. And obviously the Seahawks ended up winning that game by like 50. But because I just worry about NFL teams. They're still NFL teams. They have NFL players, and they're not that much worse than you are. So, yeah, you know, anything can happen in an NFL game. But if you lose to either of these two next, especially the Giants and Jets, Washington's a little bit better, I think. The Giants and Jets are terrible, and you should not lose those games.
All right, the new Brock and Salk podcast just dropped last night. Today's Wednesday. Gosh, I almost forgot. It felt like Sunday with this game today. You can find that at brockandsalkpodcast.com.
You sure can?
I'm nailing it.
You're
getting all
it.
Of this down.
Great
Thanks,
job.
Mike.
See you guys.
All right. DK Metcalf is giving the Seahawks something they have never, ever had before. And that's not just because of what he does on the field. We'll tell you what it is next.
You're listening to Jake and Stacey.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studios.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Jake Heaps and Stacey Rost.
This hour of Jake and Stacey is brought to you by Muckleshoot Casino. Jake Heaps, Stacey Rost here with you. Before we went to break, I let you guys know that DK Metcalf is giving the Seahawks something they've never, ever had before. Ever. Not just because he's a huge receiver on the field, but something they've never had. Some of you are not going to like this statement, so I'm going to say it, and you can react. 710-710, Vizzy Hard Seltzer. DK Metcalf might be the biggest superstar the Seahawks have ever had. The biggest superstar already year two that they've, I'm talking Russell Wilson. I'm talking anyone they've ever had in uniform, in a Seahawks uniform, biggest superstar. Agree or no, Jake?
The biggest superstar. I don't know if I agree with that as much as I think that he might be the superstar the Seahawks have never had.
And what I
mean by that is, has there been, and I want the audience to text in here, the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line, 710-710. Has there ever been a player that has come in with as much national recognition as DK Metcalf?
The closest is Jimmy Graham.
Okay. So Jimmy Graham, I think that you could probably say the Boz, right?
Yeah.
Brian Bosworth, when he came to Seattle, was, I mean, he was unbelievably, you know, culture. He was sensational. He was out of this world, right? And it was a huge deal that the Seahawks drafted Brian Bosworth, the Boz. And but my next question is a superstar that has come into Seattle beforehand and then panned out to live up to those expectations. I don't think there's one.
No, I can't think of one.
I don't think
either.
There's one. People are texting in here, Jerry Rice, Marshawn Lynch, Richard Sherman. I think you're missing the context of what we're saying. We're saying that not just the biggest superstar that has been on the team, but one that became theirs,
right,
and then that developed. Richard Sherman was not a star.
That starting when from he their came acquisition, he was a star.
Exactly.
And Boz, it would be Boz if Boz was here at a time when Twitter and when media consumption is the way it is now. I think it's different. Like, would that have been the case if he was drafted by this team in 2019? Yeah, it would. But it's just a different level of national talk, right? When it's a modern day, like with the media environment as it is, the closest why I mentioned Jimmy Graham is like this blew up on Twitter, right? This was something everyone was talking about. Front cover, NFL.com, ESPN.com, a blockbuster trade all over Twitter. Everyone's talking about it. Doesn't end up panning out. So that was why it was my first reaction. Like, where's the conversation happening when someone's acquired? Marshawn Lynch was acquired. He became a huge superstar for them. He's a huge star now in commercials all over the place, promotions all over the place, an incredibly popular figure, even now that he's not in the NFL. But it wasn't like that when he was acquired, which I think is the good point you make about Richard Sherman, that he became a star, but not when he was drafted.
Right. Russell Wilson, he was a national known commodity. It was a big deal when he got drafted in the third round by the Seahawks. He wasn't a superstar. It wasn't leading the conversation. He wasn't leading conversation until after he got, to the Super Bowl, really. Someone else texted in here, Kurt Warner, Heisman Trophy winner from Penn State. That was a big deal. But was it a national conversation? Was it, wow, this player's here in Seattle, he's here to stay, and did he keep that superstardom his entire career? When Kurt Warner came to Seattle, he was a fantastic player, an unbelievable player here, ring of honor type of player here, but was he nationally recognized? If I said Kurt Warner nationally, everyone would say, you mean the quarterback Kurt Warner, Hall of Famer.
Exactly.
They wouldn't automatically
people,
think
I still hear
Kurt Warner the
that.
Running back, right? So DK Metcalf has a chance to really become a star that the Seahawks never had. And one of the reasons for that is, yes, his size, his ability, I think that he is such a unique person, but his story is unique as well. Getting snubbed in the first round, falling all the way to the second round because of a three-cone drill that he was not particularly great at. Everybody thinking that this guy was the biggest bust waiting to happen. And now DK has emerged himself very, very quickly onto the scene that he is a legitimate superstar in this league. Not just one of the league's best, but a superstar personality.
Now, Jake, what's interesting is a lot of the responses I'm seeing or comparisons I'm seeing on the Vizzy Hard Seltzer text line are about non-football players. So Bosworth was one that a lot of people sent in as far as college fame or like pre-Seahawks fame and recognition. The acquisition by the Seahawks being a story. Like, I know there are some people that are saying, I don't know, was DK a star before he came to the Seahawks? Yes. Yes.
Yeah,
there was talk
was.
Of him going in the first round pick. If you are someone that is being mocked in the first round, you are a college star. I don't know how else to. Yes.
He was as polarizing as a draft prospect as there's been in a long time.
There were whole.
Is he a bust? Is he not? His Twitter picture of him all jacked up after a workout. I mean, he was polarizing.
Now, here's the interesting thing. The comparisons that are coming in, I've got one NBA and two baseball.
Okay.
Two people have said Griffey, Ichiro, and someone else.
No question.
Someone else said Kevin Durant. Ichiro is a good one.
Kevin Durant was a big deal. Kevin Durant was a big deal, absolutely. And he had national attention, but that lasted a year. You know, Ichiro, for sure, when you're talking about non-football, non-Seahawks, I think that that was maybe one of the most insane things I've ever seen. I was able to watch that first game with Ichiro live, and it was mayhem. Just, you know, all of, I mean, this was an international story, not just a national story. But DK very quickly has turned himself into a national star and someone that, and I think it's unique that, you know, Sherm went about it with Twitter debates, Twitter wars, particularly directed very, very much so with the scope pointed and held onto Daryl Revis. Those were wildly entertaining. But DK just has a natural feel for how to captivate an audience and how to captivate fans through social media. You know, he is a likable guy. He's a humble guy, but he also can have a lot of fun, and he interacts with everybody. I mean, everybody. Mm-hmm. And I think that's part of the reason why he is such a big star, and he is going to be an even bigger star as the season and the years go by.
I mean, yeah, you're exactly right. Look at that tweet that he had, and I took that personally. I know that there are some people, especially if you don't have Twitter, and you're like, who cares? Like, I don't care if someone gets Twitter. But when you talk about making someone a national story, having something where you're watching, you know, Good Morning Football and they show a picture of DK Metcalf or they have him on as a guest, being a personality that people follow and like and think is funny and engages with people or debates people or starts feuds, and not in this dramatic, like I'm getting in a fight with someone on Twitter way, but in a way where it is drawing a lot of attention. I love the way that's phrased. It's a star the Seahawks have never had before. It's a different kind of superstar, and sometimes it's the superstar that gets the most attention, more so than just your franchise quarterback that you know, is always going to get attention because he's a quarterback, more so than a cornerback that's going to get attention because he and this defense are revolutionizing the league and getting a lot of attention with their historic play. It's in a different kind of way. We haven't seen something like it before, and I love that comparison. So another thing that's really good about it, this is the important second part, Jake, and you mentioned this, something that's actually panning out, right? Not just someone that comes in with a lot of fanfare and someone that keeps being part of the story, someone that actually meets and exceeds sometimes your expectations. Cut number three, here's Pete Carroll talking about just how fun it is watching DK grow.
It really is exciting. It's exciting because he's got, you know, Mike, you know, there's a whole mentality that he is demonstrating that goes beyond what most receivers, you know, ever project. And that's how physical he is, how tough he is. You know, there's a toughness about catching the ball when you're getting hit, but there's a toughness about delivering a blow and knocking guys down and blowing over guys and playing through stuff. And, you know, the great slant route he caught down in there for the touchdown. I mean, that he's just continues to show you that he's finding ways to express his talent and his character and in his competitive mentality. And it's really fun to watch.
Jake, this is exactly what it is. It's someone that was hyped, really hyped coming into the draft. The Seahawks got him and you thought, oh man, this is a boomer bust guy. How's this going to work out? And then he keeps succeeding and keeps playing and you get like a rush of adrenaline feeling like a team hit on a star, right? It's when you're like, did they find something franchise altering? I haven't felt this way in a while, and fans haven't felt this way in a while, and it really does. Like, it affects you physically. You start to think like, oh my God, am I watching something? Am I watching a star? It's that feeling's rare.
Yeah, it is rare. It is rare seeing that, you know, really happen before your eyes, and that recognition and that stardom coming naturally. You know, DK, yeah, he wears a binky, and he's got a different look to him. You know, he's got the nose ring. He's got the cross earring that's coming down, and he's got a different look to him. He's got the different colored hair every single week. But he's really not a diva personality. He's really not the boisterous personality that goes out there and is starting fights and for no reason and, you know, making it all about him. He is a unique superstar in that way. And the fun thing is I think that you're going to continue to see the best version of DK Metcalf, not only on the field, but also off the field as well.
All right, you guys, Jake is getting deja vu with something the Seahawks offense is doing right now. And I have to tell you, I haven't seen him this frustrated about something in a long time. That's next.